here, bringing you episode 52, the second episode of our second season here at Write Your Best Book. For those of you who may be joining us for the first time this season, first, welcome. Let me also just give you a quick background on this lovely little podcast. We launched this with episode one, actually, on January 2nd, 2020, just over a year ago. And one day after I launched Write Your Best Book, my new online business, which combined my 10 years of experience as an author coach and book editor with other helpful tools and resources for authors, like online writing courses, downloadable templates, and yes, this podcast. When I was planning my lineup for the first season, way back in the summer of 2019, I took some of my mother's best advice and I just asked. All those huge influencers and writing experts I looked up to for years, who I wanted to bring on the podcast as guest hosts, well, I simply emailed them and I asked. I explained my vision for the podcast and I asked them to join me. And overwhelmingly, 99.9% of the time, the answer was yes. Over the course of season one, I had the privilege and the pleasure of sitting down and discussing the craft of writing with people like Dave Chesson of Kindlepreneur, Ricardo Fayette of Readzy, Jerry B. Jenkins, Jeff Goins, Jane Friedman, Derek Murphy. I mean, there's so many. And by September, we received word that our podcast had been named a top 10 rated podcast on the craft of writing for authors by a pretty big blogger. And by the year's end, we had a total of over, I believe, 25,000 unique downloads. Now, I know that's not huge numbers compared to some of the big gun podcasters like Pat Flynn or Amy Porterfield, but for a little known author coach with virtually no following at the time, I'm super proud of all we've accomplished in just 1 year. But by October, we started to realize we were running out of writing experts to interview. So we decided to shift our focus just so slightly for season two. And this year, we're still talking all things writing, from the craft itself, mostly, to some publishing and even marketing, but this time with well-known, best-selling, successful authors. I'm sitting down each week with amazingly talented writers, such as Mary Kubica, Lisa Unger, Liv Constantine, and several more. And this week, it's no exception. On this week's episode, I sat down with author Alan Eskins to discuss evoking emotions through our writing. And in my humble opinion, Alan is the perfect author to discuss this topic with. I first discovered him when I picked up a copy of his book, The Life We Bury, in a little bookshop in DC. Well, it's not that little. It's called Politics and Prose. But I found it, like one copy left. I read the back cover, fell in love with the story idea, bought it, and read it in 3 days. And let me tell you, talk about evoking emotions. Eskin does exactly that, and then some, with his depiction of his characters, especially Carl Iverson, I believe, a nursing home resident on compassionate release from prison after serving 30 years for murder. At first, I thought, okay, there's no way I'm going to relate to, let alone feel anything for, this old curmudgeon of a murderer, you know? But sure enough, Eskins proved me wrong and did exactly what we're here to discuss today. He evoked unexpected emotions through his beautiful narrative, compelling dialogue, and unique characters. As authors, I think we can all agree that we don't just want readers to love our words. We want them to feel our words. Today's guest host has mastered this element of the craft of writing, and I cannot wait to let you listen in on our discussion about this very topic. But first, let me tell you just a little bit more about Alan. Alan Eskins holds a journalism degree, a law degree, and an impressive MFA in creative writing. I know you're impressed, but I'm not done yet. Eskins practiced criminal law for 25 years before retiring to his home in Minnesota, where he lives with his wife, Jolie. He has written and published 6 novels, including The Life We Bury and its prequel, Nothing More Dangerous. He is the recipient of the Barry Award, Minnesota Book Award, Rosebud Award, Left Coast Crime, and Silver Falcon Award, and has been a finalist for the Edgar Award. Big time. Thriller Award and Anthony Award. Wow. His books have been translated into 26 languages. All right, without further ado, I now bring you my discussion with author Alan Eskins. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. And as promised, I have Alan Eskins here in the show with me. We're going to talk to Alan briefly about evoking emotions through your writing. But first, I want to welcome him to the studio. So hi, Alan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Glad to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. So why don't you start by telling my listeners a bit more about you and your writing journey, your books, or basically anything that you want them to know about you?
Okay. My journey started in Missouri, where I grew up. I was a poor student. I did not do well in school. But when I was in high school, on a dare, basically, I joined the school play and just fell in love with theater. And it was my love of theater that got me to go to college. I'm the son of a drywaller, and my plans before theater was to just go into construction. But I went to college as a theater major. And once I got to college, I really became a student. I just fell in love with the notion of being able to learn. And eventually I changed my major to journalism. I went to law school, got a degree, practiced law for 25 years. But in that time that I was practicing law, there was something missing. And what it was missing was this creative side that I had developed in theater. And I wanted to do something to be creative again. So I started writing a short story, and I liked what I was doing. I didn't know anything about creative writing. So I started reading books on writing. I started taking classes, and I studied creative writing for 20 years while I'm practicing law. And I was doing it for my own enjoyment, my own fun. And after 20 years, I decided to try and get published. So I'd been working on this one manuscript for the entire 20 years. And I put that manuscript aside, started a new one, wrote it. I thought it was good enough to get published, found an agent, found a publisher. And from then on, I've been writing about a book a year and just enjoying the heck out of it.
And so are we, at least I am for sure. So this week we are discussing the process of evoking emotions in readers through our writing. So was that something that came naturally to you? I know you just said you really wanted to study the craft. So did it come naturally to you when you first got really serious about writing? Or is this something that you kind of learned through trial by error?
It came a bit naturally just because of my theater background, I think. My understanding of storytelling had been formed by theater. And the thing about theater is, you know, you go to a play, and if it's a musical or whatever, there's wonderful acting, there's wonderful dancing and singing, but it's the shows that make you feel emotion, that you walk out of the theater and think, that was just terrific. I mean, other plays, they could be adequate, they could be fun to watch, but the ones that stay with you were the ones where there's really powerful emotions that you feel. And so I think because of my background in theater, I wanted to understand how a playwright, how an author, how a songwriter is able to create that feeling in an audience. And so I began just reverse engineering everything that made me feel emotion, whether it's a song, whether it's a play. What did the writer do to bring about that point at the end where I felt emotion? And when I decided to become a writer and publish a novel, that was very important to me, that I focus on evoking And also, I also had a teacher. One of my teachers, when I was studying in the MFA program, was very, very strong on evoking emotion in readers. And so that's at the core of what I do.
I can see where that's important. And I don't know if you've ever been asked this question, but I've always been asked, what's the one book that made you cry, or what book made you cry? And for me, oddly, was Stephen King's 11/22/63. Don't ask why, but it did. It just, at the end, I don't know if you've read it, I won't want to spoil it, but the end just made me emotional. So it is important, and I can see where your background in the theater can really help with that. So that's really cool to hear that you had that kind of naturally inbred in you, maybe a little bit. So, did you ever cry at a book?
Yes, Where the Red Fern Grows. I was a teenager.
Wow, yeah.
I read that book and I bawled, and it made me mad that that this book was able to do that. And so I read it. It was the first book I ever read twice, and I read it a second time just to prove that I could read it without crying. And I get to the point, the most emotional point of the book, I'm telling myself, it's just words on paper. It's just words on paper. By God, I cried again. And that was also a strong lesson, that, you know, this author was able to make me buy into this story to a point where I couldn't convince myself it wasn't real.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, in your multi-award winning novel, oh, let me back up, because I wanted to ask you something about twists. So when you said before that you like to create twists and turns in a story, then go back and explore the emotions, like you mentioned earlier, of the involved characters, tell me how this process works for you.
Okay. First of all, I outline. I don't, that first book I worked on for 20 years, that one I didn't outline until I rewrote it just actually 2 years ago. I rewrote it and I outlined it to start with. But I outline, and when I outline on two planes. One plane, I write what's considered mystery novels. So I write the external plot on one plane. You know, what is it that's the vehicle that's going to tell the story? What's the mystery? What's got to be solved? When I'm done with that, I'm not done with my book. I'm only half done. I then go back and do a second outline of what is the character's journey. What is it that makes this character move from this point, from point A to point Z at the end, and have changed? And so I do these two outlines, and then I work them together into a single story, so that what I want to do is have the emotional, personal character story outline be strong enough that it could be a novel in and of itself. And I want the external plot mystery thriller outline to be strong enough to be a plot in and of itself, so that, you know, my readers a lot of times think they're reading a mystery, but they're really reading a story. For like example, The Life We Bury, it's really a brother story. It's a young man wanting to run away from his responsibility for his autistic brother. Mm-hmm. And if you took that plot line out and just had that book as a novel itself, you would have a complete story with, you know, that carries the emotional core of the novel.
It certainly does. And speaking of that novel, which won many book awards, the protagonist, Joe, you were just mentioning, meets Carl Iverson in a nursing home where he's dying of cancer after receiving a compassionate release from prison, where he'd spent 30 years after being convicted of murdering a young girl. Though at first, I honestly was a little appalled by the character, just based on when we learned this, you know, you managed to write this character in a way that it didn't take me long at all to really kind of empathize with him. So what's the key to making a possibly unlikable character endearing to the reader?
Well, the word you used, empathy, is the key. Pity is a very strong emotion. Empathy is a very strong emotion. I think it was Aristotle who said it's one of the two strongest emotions in storytelling. And what you want to do as a writer, especially with your protagonist, is you want to make that character empathetic. And by empathetic, I mean you want the reader to be able to put themselves in that person's shoes. Now, when you have I'll talk about that a little more in detail in later, but when you have a character who is like Carl is unsympathetic at the beginning, but he's also the mentor character of the story. And he's guarded. But you have to make even those kind of characters relatable. And the best example that I can give is Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. Hannibal Lecter is not the antagonist. He's not the villain in that story. He's the mentor. And so what the author did was put Hannibal Lecter in a situation where we, the reader, start to empathize. He's in a cage. He's being treated very poorly by this Dr. Chilton at this asylum, and he's being punished because he's smarter than Chilton. He's being punished because he's more clever. And so anybody who has worked in an office where they are being treated unfairly by someone who is above them in authority but lesser than them in their opinion in talent or abilities can understand Hannibal Lecter's situation. Also, Hannibal Lecter treats Clarice with respect. One of the points of the novel is Clarice is in a man's world, and in that man's world in the FBI and with the local sheriffs and stuff, she's treated with misogynistic overtones. But it's Hannibal Lecter who treats her with respect, who actually kills a man in this couple cells down because that man treated her with disrespect. So you even though he eats people, even though he's a terrible human being, you start to empathize and you think, if I were a sociopath or psychopath, I would want to be like Hannibal Lecter. I'd want to have that kind of grace and poise and dignity about me. And you can't help but start to put yourself in his shoes. And that's the key. It's relatability for all your characters.
Well, and you did. You pulled it off so well in that book. And before we go on just a little bit, I need to stop and hear from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Authors, are you what we sometimes lovingly refer to as a newbie writer, but it's your dream to one day become a successful author? If you follow me for any length of time, and if you listen to what all the writing experts say, you know that the very first step to writing a great novel is learning the craft of writing. It's no different than if you wanted to be, say, a concert pianist. Before you could book a concert hall and play some huge concerto in B minor, you'd have to first learn where your fingers go on the keys, what each keynote sounds like, and how to put those notes together to form the most basic chord of music. Then, after practicing chopsticks, Mary Had a Little Lamb, and, well, all those other piano classics, for a while, you slowly learn more complicated pieces, usually with the help of an experienced and professional piano instructor. After months and months of practice, hard work, and determination, only then are you ready to showcase your talent for, well, anyone to see. Same goes for writing great works of fiction. But instead of learning by reading sheet music, as a writer, you now find, oh my gosh, tons of helpful resources online to help you easily and quickly, allegedly, learn the most basic rules of writing great fiction. And at Write Your Best Book, we have created dozens of these resources that you can access and download instantly on your computer, from character sketch templates to the perfect setting playbook to the hero's journey workbook for plotting to self-editing guides and so many more. You can now grab over a dozen of these resources from our Etsy shop. We're adding new resources almost weekly, and many of them are editable PDF downloads. The few writing resources that are currently available on other Etsy shops, not to knock them, but they're all printable, bland, not really user-friendly templates. But in the Write Your Best Book Etsy shop, our templates are colorful, quick and easy to download, and they're the ones that you'll need to fill out are easily editable within any basic computer program. After all, who really prints anything these days anyway? So head on over to the Etsy shop for Write Your Best Book by visiting etsy.com. Enter Write Your Best Book in the search window, or you can simply click on the show notes for this episode for instant access. All right, now let's finish up my chat with Alan Eskins on evoking emotions through your writing.
Okie dokie. So we are back with author Alan Eskins, and we are discussing how we can evoke emotions in readers through our writing. And so let's get back into our conversation here. So Alan, often when working with my coaching or editing clients, I find myself like even turned off by the protagonist, either because they're not likable at all, or because the writer perhaps has not done anything to help me, like you were just speaking of, identify, relate, empathize with this character. So how do you write characters like Joe Talbert, not only likable, but someone that we can really relate to?
I find that some of the best teachings on this subject come from screenwriters. There's one in particular, Carl Iglesias, Writing with Emotion, who does a terrific job of breaking things down into components. That's how I learn best, is to understand the components. And then once I know the rules and the components, I can start putting things together. So what he talks about is you want to, again, make the reader feel empathy. You want the reader to relate to this person and subconsciously put themselves into this character's shoes. So they have to care about the character. Even if it's Hannibal Lecter, they have to care about the character. And they also have to care about the character's goals. They have to be worthy goals. So to care about the character, you have, you know, like we talked about, have the protagonist be treated unfairly, have the protagonist downtrodden and neglected, betrayed. You know, there's all these things you can do to a protagonist. Make life tough for them. Joe Talbert, he is struggling to stay in college. He's broke. He has no money. He's struggling with his desire to have his own life when there's this guilt of leaving his brother behind, where he's responsible for his brother. So it's those kind of core emotions that pull the reader in. I've even gone so far as I will look up Maslow's hierarchy of needs as I'm creating a character. And I'm thinking, okay, where at on this scale is this person lacking? Where are they struggling? Because the Maslow's hierarchy of needs is just a list of needs that every human being has. And you start with the most basic at the bottom, food, shelter, clothing. And as you move up, you have, you know, love, connection, self-esteem, those kind of things. And as I'm, you know, doing the Dr. Frankenstein, creating the character aspect of my novel writing, I am trying to put aspects of those needs into my characters, because I know that as the reader reads, the reader is going to have those same kind of needs and start associating with the character. And you want the character also to be admirable. There's the save the cat. Again, this is a screenwriting term, but the save the cat moment in a movie is whenever you have the opening sequence, within a few minutes of the movie opening, there's usually a moment where your protagonist does something nice. Even if they're a bad guy, they'll do something nice. Aladdin, he's a thief, you know, but within the first few minutes of the movie, Aladdin gives his bread to this little orphan girl. Oh, and then goes on to there's some soldiers riding through town. He saves her from being trampled by a horse. That's the save the cat moment. If you look for this stuff, you'll see it in almost every movie. Even when you have a bad person, at some point they're going to do something nice because they want you, the author wants you to tie into that person. Now, the exception is like the Scrooge type movies, where the person is just a bad person and the whole movie is about them becoming someone who would save a cat. But so there are all these techniques, and this is, you know, by studying writing for 20 years, I really spent a lot of time living with this stuff. And once you understand these techniques, you feel almost like you're manipulating the reader. But what you're really doing is you're trying to bring them into the story so that they feel something.
Yeah, that's great. And I believe maybe that's why Save the Cat has become, you were talking about this in terms of screenwriting, it's become increasingly popular with novelists too, to use this Save the Cat book and method and all this stuff. So I can see why now. That makes a lot of sense.
And the Save the Cat theory is really developed for screenwriting. So it's beats. No, I think there's 15 beats. Every movie should have these 15 beats. My thought on that is I want to understand thoroughly that principle so that if I don't follow it, I can explain here's why I'm not following it. But I understand the principle is there. So I don't simply write something that may not work.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I had actually been meaning to look into the Save the Cat a little bit more lately, so that explains it and very clearly, and I can see how that is working and resonating with novelists too. So, well, in your latest release, which I was so excited to get to order yesterday, Nothing More Dangerous, you took Joe Talbert's law professor from The Life We Bury and made him your protagonist in this new book. So tell me, what can we expect in your latest novel and how you feel that evoking emotions in readers, both through your narrative and your dialogue, and how'd you do this? How do we do the same in our own books?
So when I talked about that novel, that the manuscript I worked on for 20 years, that is Nothing More Dangerous. This is the book that I spent 20 years trying to put together. I put it aside, wrote five other books, then went back and started from the beginning and rewrote it. So Bodhi actually existed as a 14 or 15-year-old boy in that manuscript, in that novel, before he was in The Life We Bury. So as I'm writing The Life We Bury, I'm creating this character who is a law professor. And it occurred to me that this law professor is who I became as an adult. And this kid who I had already written about in this previous manuscript was who I was when I was 15 years old. And so I made him the same person. So I took Bodhi when he was 15 years old, it's 1976. I really spent a lot of time giving him relatable problems. It's a coming of age story, but it's also a story about race. In 1976, his understanding of who he thinks he is. One other thing I want to touch upon is the character's desires. Some authors do biographies of their characters before they write a novel. I do, because at least to the extent that I want to know what it is my characters desire, what they fear, what they desire, because they're going to act and react within a scene consistent with that aspect of their character more than anything else. So, there's a complex type of character. If you can give that character two levels of desire, one is, here's what I think I want. The conscious, I'm going for this desire. And then a subconscious desire that they may not even know about. So for example, in Nothing More Dangerous, the 15-year-old kid thinks he wants to run away from home. He thinks that his life would be better if he could just leave. He's 15 years old. He's saving up money to buy a truck when he turns 16. He's got some skills as a drywaller. He's going to take off when he turns 16 and be gone. That's his conscious desire. His subconscious desire, though, is to have a home that he doesn't want to run away from. And he doesn't realize that that's really what he needs, what his desire is. And so over the course of the novel, the events that occur bring into focus that subconscious desire that he really wants to find, have a home that he doesn't want to run away from. And there's this one scene towards the end of the book where he's playing catch with his neighbor and he looks around and he realizes, this is what I really wanted. You know, my neighborhood is like my family now. And so having that dual level of desire creates a complexity where the reader knows this is what you really want, Bodhi, but Bodhi doesn't realize that. And so the reader will follow the story saying, you know, you got to learn this. You got to learn that this is what you really want. Understanding my character's fears and desires, I think I couldn't write a novel without knowing that.
I agree completely. And I do even coach my clients and do it myself. We call them character sketches, biographies, same thing, you know, knowing your character, how can you develop, create, or even introduce this character to anybody else if you don't know them well enough yourself. So that resonates a lot with me personally, because I know what you're talking about.
And a lot of people stop with character traits. You know, the person's this tall, they wear glasses, they you know, prefer this kind of pickup truck. You know, those are traits. What is more important is the driving characterization of the person, the desires and the fears, and you know, knowing what they, how they will react in a scene because of that is key.
It is. I agree so much. I have one more question for you before I let you go that I think everybody, all my listeners would want to pick your brain a little bit about something like this. I know you've been asked, what's your best advice for authors? I'm just going to ask it in a different way. So I've read articles where you say that writing is a craft that can be studied, honed, and practiced. Of course, I'm paraphrasing, but I tell my clients the same thing almost daily. So do you have any parting advice for new writers who want to be successful like you one day when it comes to craft?
It's always be learning, constantly be learning. Listen to podcasts like this. Listen to podcasts on writing, on screenwriting. When I, you know, I'm going into town this afternoon. I'm going to be listening to a podcast on screenwriting as I drive into town, because I could listen to music or something else, but I'm learning when I'm listening to, and there's always some new thing, some little tidbit that you get and you think, oh, you know, I never thought about that. And then practice it, use it. That's the key, I think, is I've read so many books on writing technique. I've taken so many classes. At some point, you get to the point where you could teach the class, and I'm still thinking I need to learn more and more and more. So I'm never going to be done learning. And that's part of the joy of being a writer, is constantly trying to perfect your craft and take it further and further and further.
I love hearing that, because I feel the same way. You know, I'm 10 years into my writing career and now teach courses at the Carnegie Center and do all these things that I do, but I still learn every day. I mean, I agree with you, you never really get to where you learn at all, because one thing is things change. Of course, rules change, right? But then there's just so many new things that come out, like the Save the Cat and all these things I hadn't even heard of until the last year. So I totally agree with you. You can never learn enough. Just keep learning. All right. Finally, tell my listeners where they can follow you if you want them to, find you on the internet, buy your books, whatever you want them to know. Okay.
I can be found at on like Twitter. Okay. A. Eskens is my Twitter handle, AESKENS. My website is Alan Eskens, AlanEskens.com. I have a Facebook page for my author. It's Alan Eskens Author. So yeah, anybody who wants to follow, I don't do a whole lot of tweeting unless I have a book coming out, then I tweet and stuff about where I'm going to be, so people know where to find me on my book tours. But if you want to look me up, that's where you look me up. And I'm in most bookstores. I think I'm in all bookstores. But and by the way, you can always get my books on Amazon. But if you go to your local bookstore, I would greatly appreciate it. They are wonderful people. They're being beaten up by Amazon. So if you're going to buy a book, get it from Amazon. Or get it from your local bookstore, and they will, you know, mail it to you if you want. You know, I had people wanting signed books. Well, if you contact a bookstore that I'm going to be doing an event at, I'll sign the books and they'll mail them to you. So patronize your local bookstores.
I agree. In fact, I found your book at a local bookstore.
Excellent.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Alan, so much for joining us on the show today. It was such a pleasure, and hopefully you'll consider coming back next year.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot.
Well, I don't know about y'all, but for me, this was such an awesome experience. It's so cool to read a book you absolutely love, then just a couple years later, get the chance to not only meet the author, but sit down and pick their brains about their process and how they approach the writing craft. A special, totally thank you to Alan Eskens for taking time out of his busy writing schedule to have this conversation with me and share his insights with each of my listeners. And don't forget to check out his books on Amazon and wherever else they're sold, because they're everywhere. I highly recommend you start with The Life We Bury, although that's not sequentially the first one. I'm currently reading the prequel, Nothing More Dangerous, and it's equally as mesmerizing and emotion-provoking. Also, be sure to follow him on Facebook, I believe, and Twitter, at Alan Eskins, and read about all his books on his website, alaneskins.com. Be sure you stay connected with Write Your Best Book podcast by subscribing now so you don't miss any more of the amazing authors we have lined up for you this season. And don't forget to check out the video version of Write Your Best Book, the podcast, on YouTube. Link in the show notes, folks. So far, I've really only had time. This is really sad, but I've only had time to have like three of them produced and put up on YouTube, but they're three of our best so far from season one. I plan on adding more each week starting in February once I get some behind the scenes stuff taken care of. So keep an eye out and subscribe there as well. And as always, please be a dear and follow us on all social media platforms for daily, weekly, regular writing tips, tricks, and advice. You can follow us basically on all platforms at Write Your Best Book, and subscribe to our newsletter for weekly, more in-depth writing advice for free by visiting our website, writeyourbestbook.com. That's all for this week, folks. Stay tuned for episode 3 and 4 and 5 and on and on and on every Friday morning. Talk soon, and in the meantime, go write your best book. This is what you've been waiting for.